It is episode 14, First and Now. Matt Baker here. No Jamie Cartmell this week. Some well-deserved time off, and wouldn't you know it, in honor of episode 14, we have the gentleman who used to wear number 14, a 2011 Grey Cup champion, CFL Most Outstanding Player, Travis Lule in the house.
I know you've been holding out just to get me on episode 14, so I appreciate you making that happen at the appropriate time.
Well, we had to drag you out of your little office there. You're on the phone making sales calls 24/7.
Yeah,
it's like Wolf of Wall Street back there.
Grind don't stop. Won't stop, right? So here we go. I'm totally just doing you a favor here today. So enjoy it while I'm here.
Yeah, the truth is we needed a body.
I know. Yes. I know I am no Jamie Cartmell, but I am sitting in a seat right now. So for the time being, it's what you get.
Jamie, if you're listening, I hope you're enjoying a bye week. Some of us are actually in here working. Okay, moving along. It's funny. We had you on, I want to say it was episode 2 or episode 3.
Yeah.
After you had announced your retirement. And right. We did a little in-studio thing with Mike Riley as well. And since that time, you're back in the office, but you're wearing dress shoes. You're ducking out of here at 5 o'clock. You're in at 9. It's a sales job. How has the transition gone from playing to being part of the corporate team here?
Let the record show I'm in well before 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Matt Baker.
Well, that just shows you when I get in.
Right? Fair enough.
No, it's been good. You know, like clearly there's been a transition in what I do on a day-to-day basis, but knew that going in, obviously, to the retirement. I can say this much. My body certainly feels better the day after a game than it once did. But on game day, the juices are still there. So that part of it's not gone away. But no, it's been good. Like, I don't have any regrets about retiring or anything, you know, because people have asked how weird is it or what's it, you know, do you wish you were still out there? But, you know, I don't necessarily wish I was still out there. Obviously I missed it. I had a good run. I miss the idea of game day, but no, it feels strangely right to be on the other side, as different as it is.
We talked, I think, at the time you called it a career from playing, and you were kind of up in the air in terms of what you wanted to do. And I think the general consensus was you could have done whatever you wanted. You could have done something unrelated. There's always a chance you could go into coaching, I suppose, and not necessarily the lifestyle maybe you want right now. But how did this opportunity in sales first come about?
Yeah, no, well, so I did. I had a number of opportunities. You know, after I, you know, exhausted the idea of playing, which was the first priority and what I knew, you know, I wanted to really come to a, you know, really sound decision there. And so I felt like I did that. And so, you know, the next step was, what do we want the next little bit of our life to look like? Right. And so we don't have to put our entire life together, you know, from here on out immediately. So we kind of decided that it was going to be a priority for us to hunker down and stay where we're at least for the first year post playing. Right. And so, you know, the idea being this is a significant change in our life. I'm not shying away from that. That's just the reality of, you know, having done one thing for so long. I was a professional for 13 years. And when I started, you know, I was a single guy with a dream. And, you know, by the end of my career, I'm, you know, been married 10 years. I have 3 little kids and we've been living in Vancouver the better part of the last decade. Right. So, the first thing for us was let's take a deep breath, kind of get a feel for what life after football looks like immediately where we are. Let's not just uproot the family and take the first opportunity that comes. So that was priority one. And then Rick Lalisher, President Rick, and George Chaika, Vice President of Business, approached me about an opportunity on the business side. Obviously, in much of the football ops world, coaching staffs were in place and all those things. So even though that, you know, right, that option did come up, you know, it made more sense for me and for what I wanted out of this term of life to kind of look into this opportunity. And so, yeah, obviously, is glorified sales role. You know, big part of what I do, obviously, is continue to promote the brand. So those things, that part of it, working for the club, promoting something that I really believe in. I've been on the other side as a player and seen what we do in terms of community involvement and knowing that that's an important part of the BC Lions brand. And so kind of getting a look from the other side of it, so to speak, full-time on the business ops side. And it appealed to me. And just the way those guys approach me, I think they're good men on that side. And so we've kind of worked, maybe in parallel with them, but not directly with say Rick and George and the, you know, sponsorship team and things like that in the past. So to see that and get that firsthand experience has been really good so far. You know, even though it's quite different, it's been good, rewarding. You know, I enjoy waving the flag for the black and orange.
You mentioned Rick Lalisher, and never forget when he first took over, we had a big staff meeting out in the back portable there, kind of a meet and greet sort of thing with the staff and talk about different departments and what they do. And he said something that stuck with me. He says, it doesn't matter what you do here. We're all in sales. And I think we were talking before we started recording this podcast, episode 14, that I think I sold about 6 or 7 tickets to the game against Saskatchewan last week, not to toot my own horn. We all have to promote the brand, like you say, but take us through what a game day is like for you. It's a lot of going around and shaking hands and schmoozing, so to speak, right? What's that like?
Yeah, well, yeah, clearly my game day role has changed. And yes, that's maybe the biggest change in all of this is the actual game day. You know, so for me, I still feel this way. I like to get there early enough. This is the rhythm I've kind of developed over the first, you know, 3 home games and the preseason game there, is to get there early enough, that I don't feel rushed. So that was always important to me as a player. I like to settle in and for, you know, as a player, I always felt like any nerves that I had built up kind of settled once I got to the stadium. And once it was, you know, tangible, this is what I'm here doing, and not just this idea of the game looming in the evening. So I would like to get to the stadium early. So I do that now. I get to the stadium early enough. Now I still have enough relationships. I like to kind of poke around outside the locker room, kind of field level. I've been in the league for 10 years, so I know a lot of guys, whether it's, you know, players on other teams, opposing coaches, you know, members of the media. I've done media stuff the last few years. So there's just a lot of familiar faces that it's just fun to get an opportunity to catch up briefly. And then, you know, now I'm doing pre and post game stuff on TSN, right? TSN radio. So I head up to the Terry Fox Plaza for the hour prior to kickoff to kind of outline and speak on the night's matchup and, you know, whatever the issues are and what's happening around the league and all those things. So, you know, obviously that's another kind of natural part of having been around the league a long time is my interest level there. So that's gone well, but you know, so that's where I spend the hour, and it's quite the little party going on the tailgate. It's kind of fun to see the other side of the football game day production, right? And so then, you know, maybe pop into the team suite for a little bit and see who I'm going to visit that night. And so, you know, have an opportunity to meet some of the partners that maybe I haven't seen for a while or a new partner, or just what, you know, whatever it is, seeing relationships and making sure everybody's enjoying their moment, mostly on hospitality level, on suite level on game day.
Never forget working evening shifts at TSN 1040, even going back to when it was known as the Team 1040. And after a Lions loss, the foam boards can be a little fun. What's that part of it been like on the radio side?
Yeah, I've said this, you know, it's more or less exactly what I thought it would be after a loss.
Because as a player, you do your best to tune out of that stuff, right?
I was going
to
say, it's exactly what I thought, which is why I never tuned in before, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously it's important now in this role and on this side of things to hear all of the feedback. Yeah, you know, and there's going to be some critical stuff. And I genuinely believe that even the negative feedback is good because that means people care. So when it doesn't go like we won on game day, and I the first thing I want to do is, like, I feel your pain. I feel the disappointment in the moment. I mean, you did as a player too. Obviously you did. I mean, this is you wear it a lot longer into the week, but as a spectator, an observer now, somebody who's on the outside, not on the football ops side, who has very little control, zero control, read, on the game day outcome. Sometimes that feels like it's because it's entirely out of control. It's almost more frustrating. At least as a player, I felt like, oh, I can do this better next game, or I have a little bit of control over the outcome being different or better next time. So now it's like, oh, there's nothing I can do, you know? So, so I get that strong emotion. It's when you're just sitting back and watching that happen, and, you know, nobody's excited about the home team losing, but, you know, obviously there's a lot more stuff that goes into it, but hearing that feedback is an important part of, you know, what we do in terms of you know, making the fan experience as good as it can be, even if it's, you know, on the wrong side of a losing effort.
Travis Lule is with us on episode 14 of First and Now as we kind of transition. You know, we're not going to get into too much of what's going on the field, but as we record this, I guess 2 days after a loss to Saskatchewan, a second straight loss to Saskatchewan, 1-6 to start off, as a player who's been through it, Everyone points to 2011, and you reminded me the 2010 season was also, I think, a 1-6 start before a big turnaround and Casey getting cut, you taking over as the starter and almost pulling off a shocking upset in Saskatchewan. What's going through those players' minds right now, though?
Yeah, you know, I think what's the challenge for players in this at this stage of the season is to accept like the current reality for meaning that what I mean to say is because you're 1-6 now, right?
We're
1-6. That doesn't mean you're terrible, right? Like so as a player, so often we say, oh my gosh, right now the team is bad. I am bad. That's kind of the negative self-talk is we're no good. And so once you get there, it's really hard to get out of the hole. And so the challenge is, well, how do we get better, right? So maybe you don't go, oh, we have to win 8 of the next 9 games to have a chance. You know, like that's way ahead of you. You have to stay in the moment and really, and I know it sounds a little bit cliche to say, but just to be really honed in on the immediate and what you can actually control. What can you actually do to help make this thing go better, right? And so often there's just this narrative that, oh my gosh, the season's over, the season's a wash, this season's no good, these players are no good, we need to start over. And so if you start to hear that and believe that as a player, well, do you think that makes you more or less likely to play well in the next game, right? Less likely. So you have to fight some of that natural human emotion that's, you know, negativity or disappointment and continue to hone in on the things that you can actually control to affect the outcome in a more positive way.
2011, you told me a great story. I guess Twitter was sort of still in its infancy at that time. Certainly not what it is today, but you had the negative feedback. In the midst of that bad start, you recall some interesting Twitter discussion, do you not?
Yeah, sure. I was a bit naive to the social media world. And I remember I was working with a gentleman who, you know, we'd started a couple of social media accounts publicly. And I think, you know, what happened was some of it was going through and started being tweeted out. That was just like a retweet. And I hadn't adjusted settings or anything. So it was like,
right,
you know, at Travis Lulay. Liked this post or whatever. So I was like, oh, at least if at Travis Lee exists, maybe I'll take control of this thing. So I started, you know, sending out a few tweets here and there. And I remember early on getting kind of an intro to Twitter when I just tweeted out something about Purelator tackle hunger football game, bring non-perishable food items.
Pretty good cause, you know, feel good thing.
Right. This is a win-win. Like there's no loss here. And somebody says, Twitter's not for selling, do better. I'm like, oh, okay, so that's what this Twitter world's going to look like.
And don't worry about feeding the poor. It's okay. Yeah. No.
And, you know, sure enough, you know, I mean, everybody knows the story of that season. We started 0-5. So during that 0-5 stretch, I was reminded how terrible I was at quarterback, how I was always going to be I was a career backup. And what were we doing thinking this guy could be a starting quarterback? I was told I was the worst quarterback in Lions history. I was tweeted vulgarities that I won't get into, and I'm going, wow, this is a ultra negative space, right? So I pretty much just like, I don't need this, and didn't pay much attention to it. And sure enough, later in the year, you know, it ended on quite the historic note and a huge crescendo of moving back into BC Place and hosting the West Final and being named MOP and winning a Grey Cup on our home soil. And some of those exact same Twitter accounts who I recognized from early in the season were telling me how wonderful I was and, you know, calling me, now I'm Simba, I'm the leader of the pack and all these gloriful things, you know. So that gave me a little bit of an insight into how this goes, right? And so it's not always the reality that the reality is not always what you're seeing online in the present moment, right? Sometimes that's somebody's alter ego, you know, coming to speak through the keyboard. So yeah, you just kind of got to take some of that with a grain of salt, right? Because when I walk through BC Place, even when we're losing, I'm seeing a ton of smiling faces. I'm seeing the kids running around, laughing, giggling, joking. I saw our video we put out on social, how much fun those kids had seeing, you know, at family day, seeing Sky and Chase. It's all my girls are talking about. They don't know. They don't even know that we lost the game. So, you know, there's a lot of positive that comes in terms of a fan experience, even when we lose. And don't get it twisted. Like, I want to see the Lions win too, and everybody's happier with the win. But there's still a lot of good and fun experience stuff that goes on But you would not know that if you got on social media at certain times.
Yeah, we encourage you to head to bclions.com for the video of Family Day, Spider-Man and Paw Patrol, Iron Man. Some little kids got scared, I think, of Spider-Man and Iron Man. Yeah. But overall...
Yeah, my girls weren't big fans of Iron Man, but Sky and Chase were hits.
Next year, they'll be a little bit more in tune to that. So, yes, Family Day, no doubt, a great initiative put on by the CFL these past couple of years, and we look forward to doing it all over again. Now, before we talk a bit more about family, Travis, sticking with the 2011 theme, you know, everyone talks about Arlan Bruce coming in and Tad Cornegay coming in and maybe another roster tweak here or there that would have paved the way for that great turnaround, but was there a particular moment you remember in a game early on in that winning streak where you kind of said to yourself, okay, we might be okay here?
Yeah. First of all, I remember when it seemed like it happened really fast, right? And that can happen at the beginning of the season. I think some of that's true here now. It feels like we were all excited coming out of training camp and we blink and we find ourselves in this hole, right? And so I remember that feeling being quite similar in 2011. Like, holy cow, we're 0-5. Like, we're in quite a hole. And at the time, Edmonton was 5-0, right? So, like, it's a long way to go, which we ultimately ended up catching them, right, to win first in the West. But I do remember when we went to – so we got that – we finally got the first win in Empire Field that year. We went to 1-5, but then we got beat up by Winnipeg, who we would eventually beat later the next week, and went to 1-6. So we go to – we went to Edmonton at 1-6, and – we went into that game and it's like, you could feel the vibe. It's kind of the tipping point, right? Like I could feel maybe even the tension of the coaches being a little bit on edge or what changes might happen.
Yeah.
We had a bye week coming up after that. And so it felt like there was an opportunity there to get a little bit of positive momentum. And we beat 5-0, or I think Edmonton was 5-1 and we were 1-6 at the time. Or they were 6-1, whatever it was, we went there and beat them 36-1. So it was like, oh, well, this is the top team in our division, and we just thumped them. And then it felt like, well, now we got a little bit of positive vibes going, and just momentum's a funny thing. We started catching fire, and we started believing in each other, and, you know, and we really rode it the rest of the way. We had one blemish on our record from that point on, a tough night in Hamilton late in the year. But other than that, we felt soundly in control of every single game, and it's just – it's so funny to look back and think of the confidence we had at the end of that season relative to the position we were in early in the season. I mean, it's night and day. It's not even close. And, you know, BC Place was filled up and rocking, and we just rode that wave all the way to the championship. So it was obviously it's pretty special to talk about even in hindsight, but I do remember that game prior to the bye week when we beat Edmonton big. It was like, okay, like that's the potential of our team. Let's go realize that week in and week out.
Excellent perspective, and Lions fans of current times here hoping a similar turnaround is in store. You talked about your girls, three daughters out on the field post-game as part of the Family Day fun. I saw Alex Ruiz's daughters were out there too, and their dad was unsuccessfully trying to chase after them and catch up to them. Pretty funny video on our Twitter account, if I don't say so myself, but... kind of bring it full circle here, talking about the change in your day-to-day routine. No doubt it's a chance for you to spend more time with your wife and daughters.
Yeah, right. And I haven't traveled to road games, so I've had weekends in the summertime available.
You missed those trips to Regina, though.
Well, I mean, there's an element yeah. of those trips. I do.
Yes.
Sure. Stardelli and things like that. And, you know, if you can ever leave Regina with a win, that's a pretty good feeling coming home. But, yeah, boy, it's good to be home. It's good to be home on those weekends, you know. I mean, it almost guilt trips parents all the time, but you know, these memes go around and you only have 18 summers with your kids, make them count, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, that's true. Like we got to pack in as much as we can. So we're doing a pretty good job of checking off our summer little bucket list. Right. And so it's been fun, you know, whether we're going, you know, finding water slides here and there or walking around the beach somewhere, just, you know, it's really not, again, it's not even the activity that we're doing. It's spending time together and doing things. I've set up tarps for slip and slide in the yard at home a few times, right prior to Lions kickoff. So these are things I've never had the opportunity to do on a regular basis in the past. And clearly I've been able to, you know, get family time in, but it's just, yeah, it's been more than years past. And just, and frankly, general stress level is lower. It's not the peaks and valleys that happen as a player. You know, being so consumed by the wins and losses, because again, that's out of my control now, the wins and losses on the field. So, you know, I'm worried about the things that are in my control and those things have changed, right? So it's been really rewarding. And that was a whole idea of you know, what I'm doing now in this stage of life, to try to take advantage of some of that time.
Slip and slide. You know, for us 90s kids, that was the dream activity on a summer afternoon.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Baker, when was the last time you did a slip and slide?
Because
I could show you some videos.
I must have been 10 or 11 years old.
Oh, buddy,
so.
You're missing out. It's equally.
I'm coming down to your place now.
Equally
Let's go.
As awesome to do it right now.
So it's one of those things that the fun never gets. Because I'll admit, you know, being a young adult now, I go on a roller coaster. I went on my cousin's boat a couple summers ago, and I was scared. I used to love this as a kid, but I remember legitimately being scared.
Yeah.
Going tubing on the lake up in the Okanagan. But the slip and slide, that never loses its fun, right?
Yeah, that's been my experience. And yeah, something could happen. I could slip on that thing, but I think it's worth a little bit of
risk. You
don't
have to worry about missing time on the practice
field.
Yeah,
like if I dislocate my pointer finger on my right hand now, that's not the end of the world like it would have been in the past, right? So yeah, so a little less worried about that.
You know, it's funny. I remember an interview, I think it was with Matt Cook, a former Vancouver Canuck while he was still playing, and he talked about how every year when they got about a week left before training camp, his wife would always say, okay, you have to get out of the house. You have to get out of here. You know, it's been a whole summer of you being home. There hasn't been any of that yet with Kim. Is she just not sick of having you around?
Well, if she is, she hasn't directly expressed that to me. So I think we do a good enough job of finding some independent time, and at least in this day and age but certainly every off season, I could feel that creep happen. But no, I appreciate that. Like for my wife too, for Kim at home in the summertime, it's a full-time gig with the kids at home all the time. Right.
Yeah.
So having me around a little bit more often is opportunity for her to say, hey, I'm going to run to the grocery store, and it's an extra long grocery store visit. So, you know, mom gets some well-deserved time to herself to breathe where she doesn't have, you know, a preschooler or toddler clinging to her leg. And that's hugely important. So I jump at that opportunity when I get it, but no, so far it's been a pretty good summer.
Yeah. Fatherhood is fun. My daughter Elizabeth is about to be 7 weeks. God, time flies. Any advice for a young father like me?
You're just beginning, my man. Hang on. It's fun. Right?
You've got three. So I,
how are you sleeping, Matt? Let me ask. You're 7
Honestly,
weeks in? Yeah.
I'll be honest, not as bad as we thought. For the first couple of weeks, it was the standard. You have to feed her every 2.5 hours, every 3 hours. So if we're lucky to get to sleep by 11, of course, it's up at 1:30, up again at 4. But the last 2-3 weeks, I want to say, it's been about a 5-6 hour run where she'll get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock. Touch wood. I hope I'm not jinxing it by talking about this. Tonight will
might be too deep in now, Matt.
So overall, that... it's funny. A good friend of mine gave me some advice at the start. He says, you know what? The sleepless nights, you just learn to wear it like a badge of honor. So it's kind of like adrenaline. You just push it through. And I'll tell you what, it's motivating for me to get up and at him early. Like this morning, I think it was 4:45. We were both up and I was coming into work today. And so we finished feeding her around 5:45, 6. It's okay. I'm going to the gym before work. So it's motivating to somehow get out of the house and
there
work
you go.
Out.
So
in
your
the morning.
Daughter's leaving you no excuses.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because trust me, the dad bod for guys like me, anyway, guys who weren't professional athletes, the dad bod I think is a real thing. So
it's
got to be careful.
It's
here.
Something that I'm aware of at this stage. How am I going to fight off the classic dad bod? It's built into my life. Been built into my life forever. Now I got to be a little bit more conscious of what I consume.
I have to give credit to a guy you know. Our friend Cam Tucker used to write for the Vancouver Sun and the Province, now working for BCLC. He has a 1-year-old at home, and that's what he told me earlier. He says, so I'll warn you, the dad bod, it's not a myth, okay? It's a real thing. So, but yeah, sleep, the sleep part of it hasn't been the hardest part yet. So,
well, good for you. So I'll ask your wife to get the true story.
Yeah.
Is what you're telling me.
You can ask her. Well, hey, they came to the game on Saturday.
I saw.
They lasted the first half.
That's pretty good.
Elizabeth was
7 weeks. I have 3 and they last until about the fourth quarter. So
that's not bad. Yeah. I think Elizabeth was a little just disheartened with what was happening on the field.
Maybe.
You know, she's classic Baker, classic passionate sports fan. So yeah.
Well, passion's a good thing, my friend.
Well, thanks for doing this. It's a lot of fun. We should should do it more often. It's fun to give the fans and our listeners kind of an inside look at what you're doing. Your phone doesn't stop ringing, so
yeah, and I gotta go check. I gotta go check my voicemails.
You're late for a meeting.
I'm gonna be well behind because I did you this favor here, Baker. So
Chaika was just pounding on the door here.
I know George is always hounding.
Thanks, Travis.
Of course.